Greetings, true believers, and welcome to episode 27 of the Pull List Podcast, a bi-weekly show about comics, pop culture, and faith. My name is Chris Poirier, and with me, as always, is the one and only Hector! Good morning, Hector. How are you doing this lovely morning?
It's a lot of vibrato for this early in the morning, but hi.
Welcome. We won't tell people that it's not super early, but we'll make them feel like we're doing this really early anyway.
It's painstaking.
I know, but now, as we enter our second year of the podcast here at the Pull List, Hector and I really wanted to be able to bring more guests on the show, and we're starting things off right in season two, year two, insert whatever here, but it's episode 27. It doesn't matter. Keep track. We're going with legacy numbering for all of you that are keeping track. But today on the Pull List
Marvel
podcast,
Marvel made up legacy numbers or like DC actual counted numbers?
Hector, why? But today on the Pull List podcast, we want to welcome the one and only Meredith Finch.
Hi, welcome, everybody. Meredith.
Yes.
Hi,
good
thank
morning.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, Meredith has been writing comics for a while now and has worked at DC, Zanescope, Dynamite, Image, and Marvel, and so much more. We can't wait to dive in and learn even more about what you've done, Meredith, and what drives you to create and what you have in the works, because we know you've got some stuff going on right now. So, folks, strap yourselves in and prepare yourselves, for we've got Comic Sign. Better put the word out. Can't wait for the nerd out. Better put specs on. Better bring next. On today's episode of the Pull List, we've got quite a show, and we're going to mix things up a little bit. As you heard, we've got a guest, so we're going to focus on Meredith and her work and some really neat projects that she has coming up, learn a little more about her background, and also hear all about the awesome stuff that's going on right now. So let's jump in, shall we? Meredith, good morning. Welcome to the Pull List Podcast.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. And it's not that early, so I mean, I'm up.
Yeah.
Unless you're on the West Coast, then you guys get to be forgiven.
Yeah, maybe no, maybe totally we should not do that. Yeah, we're totally not. We're East Coasters. A lot of the rest of the folks here at Love Thy Nerd and the Love Thy Nerd Podcast Network do live on the West Coast, so I can't pretend to be them today. So that's fine. But Meredith, as we kind of dive in, some folks may know who you are. Some folks that listen to us may not. So how about you kind of start out and giving us a little background of who you are and kind of what you've done in comics up to this point? And we can kind of explore some of that as you give us some background. And like we said, we'll pitch right here. She does have a Kickstarter in the works, and it's a pretty neat project. I'm just going to say that right now. And full disclosure, I'm already a backer, so I might be slightly biased as we talk about it. But tell us a little bit about yourself, so folks that don't know you can get to know you a little better and some of the stuff that you're doing and have done.
Okay, I'll try to do the abridged version.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a mom of three boys, ages 11 to 18, and
oh my.
I want to say I'm best known for being married to my husband. I don't know if that feels like I'm selling myself short, though. Maybe early on I was best known for that, but I'm married to David Finch, who has been working in the comic industry for over 25 years. And he
has been drawing for a little while, yes.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a little bit of experience. He is a penciler, and he's done, you know, X-Men for Marvel and Batman for DC. And if you don't know his work, then you're not really in comics, in my opinion.
That's fair.
That's fair. Well, it's because I literally, like, when I read his name, there are certain, like, Batman things that just pop to mind. I'm not going to remember the story, but I definitely know, oh, that's David Finch art.
Yeah.
And personally, mine's Moon Knight. Like, he's okay, one of my favorite.
Yeah, for sure. His Moon Knight was, I might get shot for saying that, but I think his Moon Knight was better than his Batman.
Ooh.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
I think that's fair.
Only because Moon Knight is just like he's grungier and dirtier and more violent. And not that David's like the most mild-mannered person ever, because he gets all that violence out on the page. It works well for him. It's a form of therapy, I think.
We know that you are married to David, and that is a feat, but we also know that you have a ton of your own projects, and I think you do sell yourself a little short. So go ahead and take the opportunity, sing it loud, sing it proud, and tell our folks what they should know and what they should be reading or pick back up.
So I started working for Zenescope I did a Cowardly Lion story, which I thought was great, and some Tales of Terror, which I don't watch scary movies, but loved writing them. So if you haven't looked at the Tales of Terror from Zonoscope, definitely do that. I worked on The Little Mermaid for them as well with Miguel Mendonca, who is another phenomenal artist. I've been incredibly blessed to work with phenomenal artists throughout my career. Miguel is working for DC now, so just shows you the level of artists that I've worked with. Then I went from that to Wonder Woman, which, how does that happen? I don't know. But I mean, since we're on a Christian podcast, I think I can say it was a huge blessing for me to have that opportunity. And I did 18 issues of Wonder Woman. I finished off their new 52 run after Brian Azzarello. And it was a tremendous experience because I got to work with David on it. So if you want to know what we've done together, then you need to pick up Wonder Woman.
That was a great run, by the way.
Thank you very much. We had so much fun working on it. And we keep saying we need to find something to do together, just that our timelines haven't. He's working on something when I'm not, and I'm working on something when he's not. And then after Wonder Woman, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do in comics. So I ended up working on a creator-owned project through Image, which was published through Image, Rose, which was heavily influenced by C.S. Lewis, because he's my favorite fantasy writer and Christian writer, bar none. And it was really a love story to fantasy fiction for me because that's what I grew up reading. I didn't have access to comics as a kid beyond sort of the odd raggedy stray comic that my dad or his brothers had had. And then while I was working on Rose, I wrote Xena for Dynamite Comics, which is so much fun because I loved Xena. And I worked for a small publisher called Cave Pictures Publishing and did a story adaptation of George MacDonald's The Light Princess. And what was very special about that project is that George MacDonald was C.S. Lewis's biggest influence, or the guy who really got C.S. Lewis into fantasy fiction. So it was a very neat sort of circle of life situation getting to work on that project. And I actually ended up getting to do an adaptation, which will be coming out in 2020, of another George MacDonald book, Fantasties, which is the book that inspired C.S. Lewis. I've had amazing projects to work on. And I just finished up a run with Marvel on the Age of Conan Valeria series. We did a 5-issue mini, which was, again, so much fun to work on. Totally different. I got to do something different because she's not your typical, she's not the typical female character I would have written. She's a little rougher and grittier. It's fun to explore different aspects of, I think, my own personality each time I write these characters.
Right. And what a cross section of places that you've written for. And I know that can be true of many comic creators that as they try to get work to press or just to find those places. And like you said, to find projects that line up with your schedule can be such a challenge, but you've kind of been here, there, and everywhere, which is awesome. And I guess to kind of transition a little bit, a great question to kind of get us going is, well, what got you into comics in the first place, especially as a writer?
100% David. I blame him unapologetically. When I met him, I was a single mom with two boys, and I'd been on my own for a couple of years. And I thought, okay, I'm ready to get back into the dating world now. And when he told me he wrote comics, my first question was, or drew comics, my first question was, do you live in your mom's basement? And what kind of newspaper comic strip are you doing? And he's like, no, not newspapers, like comic book comics. And I was like, oh, like, you know, Betty and Veronica. And he's like, no, not like the Archie comics.
So the first couple dates were really interesting is what you're saying.
The second, he's lucky he got a second date actually, because as we left the restaurant, he's like, oh, here, I've got some sample comics I can give you to show you what I do. And he happened to have them in the trunk of his car. So A, he could show me that he drove a nice car, and he could show me he had a legit job. But the comic he gave me, and if anybody's familiar with with his work, you'll know which comic I'm talking about. It was an Avengers disassembled one. And it was where She-Hulk is ripping the Vision apart. So like, I think that happens on like page 2 and 3. Like there's an introduction where you see the mansion, the X-Men's mansion, and then you flip the page and then this is happening. And I was like, at the time I had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, do I want to go on another date with this guy? Like, this is the kind of aggressive sort of violent, because Dave is detail oriented, right? So it looked like, he keeps telling me it's like, what? And now I know it's the Vision, but at the time I was like, there's all these like guts and gross things. And this is like, it was, his art is very powerful and emotive. And I got a reaction from that, but he seemed like such a nice guy. He got a second date. So, and then for many years, he would keep pushing. He kept pushing comics on me. I'm like, no, babe, I read books. Thanks for that. But yeah, no. And I don't know, just, I think it's by a process of osmosis. Eventually, there's the right comic for everybody. And I started picking up the some of Jeff Johns's stuff. And there's a Kevin Smith Daredevil story that I read. And honestly, I think it's that Kevin Smith Daredevil story more than any other book that just, I just could not put it down. I'm like, okay, you know what? Maybe I do like comics. And I've always been a writer. I've always written. It was something, one of those things that in the back of my mind, I thought maybe one day I'll write a book. And Dave had been reading some of my writing. He's like, you know what? This is ridiculous. The kids are at this point, our youngest was 5 and in school, had started school. He's like, you've got time. You don't know what you're going to do. Cause I had a teaching certificate, but I didn't have French. And here in Ontario, if you don't have French, if you're not bilingual, you can't get a teaching job right now. So I was kind of like, what am I going to do? And he's like, you're going to write. And he's the one that went, he forced me. He went to Zenoscope and asked them if they would be willing to give me a shot. And he basically traded it for covers. He's like, I'll do covers for your book if you'll give Meredith a chance and try out as a writer. And it wasn't very long, like a few issues in, I didn't need him to trade covers anymore. They were really happy with what I was doing. You know, I got the Little Mermaid miniseries, and then things just kind of rolled from there. So yes, it's all Dave's fault.
And he almost lost it over being too good of an artist for She-Hulk. So
that's right.
That's an origin story that I'm down with, because right, David Finch almost outdrew himself from a relationship, and Kevin Smith gets the credit for being an amazing writer. And Hector and I happen to entirely agree, especially on that particular run. Yeah, go for it.
Just the fact that was the inspiration piece, like, I don't know, that brings a whole level of joy to me, because like, that's such an underappreciated run. Like Kevin Smith's Daredevil run, like, literally flies under the radar for so many people. And yeah. I honestly didn't read it until a year ago. And one of our comic book artist friends, Lyle Pollard, like, yelled at me publicly for not knowing that book. So that's awesome.
That does sound like Lyle.
It is, yeah.
That's fair. So yeah, so you mentioned Ontario. So did you grow up in Canada? Is Canada's home now?
Canada born and raised.
They're in Ontario, or?
I grew up in Belleville, Ontario, which is across from the lake from Syracuse kind of area. Mm-hmm. And but now I'm in Windsor, which is across from Detroit. So
yep.
That being said, David has always lived, aside from, you know, a quick time in California with Top Cow, he grew up, was born in Windsor and grew up in Windsor, and we love it. It's the best of both worlds, because we're, you know, a bridge away from a major U.S. city that has NFL and NHL and opera and a major international airport. I mean, I can get to the Detroit airport in 30 minutes. It would take me, there's nowhere in Toronto next to the Pearson Airport that I could live and have all of the things I have here and be that close to an airport. So
yeah, it's worth Detroit getting a shout out here too, that for folks that still think it's the Detroit of 15 years ago completely falling apart. I've been in the last few years, and Detroit has gone through such an amazing revival of just everything. Like you said, there's so much there, and it's all downtown now.
Yeah,
it really deserves more credit than it gets kind of from the media, because they want to tell the horrible story of its past, but it's actually this really amazing story of the Phoenix literally rising from the ashes of difficulty to become an amazing cultural center. And then, like you said, just across the river, its Canadian counterpart is also just amazing, and it's an area I want to get back to. So that's an awesome place to be able to call home, and like you said, be able to travel about really easily. So that's awesome.
Not to mention, it's surprisingly quite the comic book hotbed, because Jeff Lemire is from Windsor, Essex. Jason Fabok, also from Windsor, Essex. Johnny Desjardins, who's done some stuff for Dynamite and worked on our Wonder Woman, also from Windsor, Essex. David and myself, like, there's so much creativity here. I just gave you comics. You know what I mean? There's so many filmmakers and actors, and it's for a blue collar town, there's a surprising amount of artistry and creativity that happens.
That's really neat. I never thought about all those particular connections, and that's so true. And of course, the comic book scene in Detroit and Ann Arbor, I happen to be slightly impartial to Vault of Midnight. I kind of enjoy their Ann Arbor store and the stuff that they have up there, that they kind of have a really neat local but really well-established comic shop feel. So for any of our listeners that get to, the Detroit Ann Arbor area, check out Vault, because those guys are really kind of cool. They, I think, have a pretty good understanding of the market, but they also are trying to cultivate a local, that they have an entire local section, the folks that are either hand pitching them books or so. If you're in this thing and you're trying to figure it out, sounds like you've got good friends between the two cities there. So that's pretty awesome from that. So writer married to this amazing artist, and comics has suddenly entered your bloodstream. And we know, as we started, you mentioned being blessed and everything. And so we don't want to make the assumption for our folks, but that implies kind of a faith background. And as we talk about faith and comics and how our fandom interacts here on the Pull List, a thing that we love to talk with a lot of our guests about is how faith actually impacted their life and how that kind of gets into their work. So I guess to kind of start that conversation, we have to start at the beginning, as they say, that what kind of was that journey like for you? Did you grow up in the church, or kind of what happened? I kind of made an assumption there with the church, but I'll let you kind of tell your story.
I would not say that I grew up in the church, because I definitely came from a family where we went to church on Easter and on Christmas. Sort of that a lot of baby boomers, I think, grew up going to church all the time and took a step back as a way of breaking from their parents' traditions. Both of my grandmothers were very, they had a very strong faith. And so when I would, the grandmother that lived closest to us was always sharing, her love of God and Jesus. And she just felt like her life was very touched by God. Like, she was born, the number seven was a number that, like, everything she had just sort of revolved around the number seven. And she just had a very close and intimate relationship with God and was very in touch with her own faith. So she was a huge influence on me in terms of what your relationship can look like. It doesn't have to be, just sitting in a church pew. You can have that kind of intimate relationship. And then my other grandmother actually gave me the religious foundation for the church that I attend now. I just loved, she was Anglican, she came over as a war bride, and I just loved going to church with her. And it would be considered Episcopalian if you're in the States. I loved the ceremony of the service, and it just, there was something about it that it really spoke to my heart. So nowadays we go to church every Sunday, we go to an Anglican church. But that was really I would say my grandmothers were really the foundation of my faith and the start of it. And then you sort of, I think like many people, you just kind of coast along and you believe in God, but you don't necessarily go to church, or it's kind of an arm's length thing. I would say maybe 4 years ago, I started having a stronger call to reinvest or re-explore my faith. We've always been, for the last 18 years, I've been very good friends with our priest and his family. But it was kind of like, you know, I would talk to him if I had questions or something, but I hadn't committed myself to the journey yet, to the kind of journey that I think ultimately we're all called to take, to have that relationship. And as I was coming into comics and started writing comics, I started reading a lot more of C.S. Lewis, and not his novels or stories, but his faith-based writings. And I started to really feel a connection and an understanding. I think he's such a tremendous writer, and it just sparked something in me and sent me on a journey toward a deeper exploration of what I wanted from my relationship with God and the relationship he was calling me to have with him. And I started, you know, reading my Bible faithfully and going to some Bible studies and just deepening that relationship. And I feel like it was at that moment where I kind of knew that I wanted that in my work as well. So when I started working on Rose, part of what I prayed about or put out there was that what I do allows me to share on that God uses that to share something that's special and meaningful to him, or to do something for his glory. Do you know what I mean? And then I think it's just, it was kind of funny, because when the people from Cave Pictures contacted me, it's actually John Nee at the time before he went over to Marvel. The email that he sent me was almost verbatim the words of the prayer that I had prayed about my work. And so I knew that was, you know, something that God was, I felt very strongly calling me to do and to continue. So I've tried to use my work as a means of sharing my understanding of what our relationship with God can look like. I think as a mother, it resonates with me very strongly, the fact that we call God our Father, and that sort of relationship that I have with my own children and the love that I have for them, I feel is a reflection of truly what he's calling us to have with him. That kind of, you know, we're called children, his children, for a reason. And I think that that's part of the reason we have children ourselves, so that we can understand. It's a means of understanding the relationship that we're supposed to have with him.
I think for me, that's been one of my biggest things, is how my children as well have helped me grow and have helped me to really see what my faith looks like on the other end of things. That how I love them, how I deal with them. And then on the flip side, when I see how hard it is for me to parent well, that, you know, realizing how good God actually is to me, because how hard I drop the ball with things, like as a parent. And I'm like, one of the things that's constantly hit me is if I was impatient, if God was as impatient with me as I can be with my children, I'd be in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's been a big help for me. And as you mentioned, I don't want to like interrupt you. I'm going to give you right back. Just also the way that C.S. Lewis impacted you, his books challenge you. It was honestly the same experience for me, that his faith writings, as well as like his novel stuff, like from the science fiction trilogy through Narnia, through all his books, have really like, they really kind of like stop me in my tracks and make me do some really great evaluation. And look at things better. And their things from like the last battle helped me understand some things spiritually that like I straight missed in Bible college. Like I got more from reading one C.S. Lewis book than a semester of school. And you know, it's just so nice to be able to see like how that impacts you and how that translates through you as well. But go ahead. Sorry. I didn't want to like interrupt you.
No, I think I was kind of the only thing I would have said and to add on to that was that that sort of journey is, I think, ultimately what brought me to telling the story that I now have on Kickstarter, which is the Book of Ruth. Probably 2 years ago, I had just this idea as I was reading my Bible that that story, I think I must have been reading that story even, would make such a phenomenal comic. And I know it's been done before in movies and there have been other books about it, but I didn't want to do it in a traditional sort of historical way, you know, 2000 years ago. I just felt like it lent itself to a retelling in a way that might be a little more accessible for the broader public. And, you know, it took some time before I was ready to tell the story, but I, you know, all things in God's time. And I also feel like he really brought me the right artist for the book as well. So it's a very special, that project is very special for me.
So give us some detail though on what your, you know, interpretation of Ruth is going to look like and the background, your research for everything. Tell us about your project.
So the first thing I did after I read the story through again and really kind of came up with my own synopsis of how I wanted it to play out was sit down and talk with my good friend who, as I said before, is our priest. And I wanted to make sure that my idea for the story was in line with the intention of the biblical story. And he was a great resource because he would say that, you know, he made a point of making sure that I understood sort of the ups and downs of each chapter and the important things that were significant. For example, the Boaz putting his cloak over Ruth when she's at his feet on the threshing room floor. The idea of the kinsman redeemer, all of these things that I tried to make sure that I used in the story in a way that was accurately reflected the intention of the original. And the reason I picked the Depression, like this is a telling of the story. It's a following of a family set prior. I start it sort of late 1800s and then bring it through into the 1900s and into the Great Depression. And the reason I picked that era was because I just felt there's no bigger time in, I think, American history where people had such a feeling of euphoria. They were on such a high with the stock market and then experienced such a dramatic crash. And I think that lent itself to the exact same feelings that the characters in the book were going through. Like you have Naomi and Eli Melek, who I actually broke his name into Eli and gave them the last name Melek, because again, I think that's easier for people to relate to. But the whole story of Ruth is that they went through this famine and then they moved and then had this time of huge prosperity. And then they go through this tremendous famine again, both in their physicality, but also in their faith. And it's Ruth that brings them back, a woman who's not even traditionally of their own faith, but a woman, a refugee from another land, really, who brings them back to that huge faith that we see from them. So that's, I really felt like the Depression was a great reflection, setting wise, of what the people within the story were going through.
So what's the length on the book going to be?
It's right. I wrote it up 102 pages, I believe. And I've divided it into four chapters, just like the traditional book. And then we will add some extras at the end. There'll be, you know, some designs, character design kinds of things. Depending on where we get the Kickstarter, I might include a script version where you get the entire story and then the entire script. I'd like to include the biblical story in the book. So I'm still, minimum people will get 102 pages.
Okay.
But I can't help it. I'm also like, what can I add? I feel like I need to constantly add value. And people are like, no, save that for your stretch goal or save that for, I'm like, I can't help myself. I want people to feel like they got, you know, something awesome.
Yeah. The joys of Kickstarter and trying to crack that nut and figure out the perfect tiers and the stretch goals. And we've got tons of friends that have done independent comic publishing, but also board game publishing. And they all regale us with their stories of the joys of Kickstarter. So we definitely wish you well on that particular journey, because it could be kind of creative and, well, it still feels a lot like managing a project. So yes. Because it is, yeah. It's a really major one with deadlines and everything. But we've heard a little bit about your story and kind of plugging in your interest for Ruth. Tell us a little bit about your artist. Off the top of my head, I didn't recognize the name, and that could be shame on me. So nope. Tell us kind of how you found and chose your artist for this project.
All right. So when Dave and I were talking about doing this, and I started it because I knew Rose was finishing up, I was like, how are we going to find an artist? Like, I had been looking through portfolios. We know several artist reps. So I've looked through portfolios of the types of artists they represented. And I didn't want something, I had a very specific look I wanted for this book. I didn't want it to look really superhero comic-y. So Dave suggested that we go on Facebook, just post it on Facebook and see what happens. And so we did. We put a call and I said, I'm doing a Christian creator-owned project and I'm looking for an artist. Please send me your submissions. And we got a huge amount of submissions the first day. And I looked through everything and, you know, Dave and I just we really had kind of a Jason Sean Alexander look or feel that we wanted the book.
Nice.
Unfortunately, he wasn't available. And I went to bed that night and I was feeling a little down and maybe feeling a little defeated. And I just said a prayer that night. I'm like, Lord, I feel like you have called me to do this book. And I feel like the book is exactly, I hope that it's what you want it to be, but I need your help finding an artist. If this is something that you truly want me to do, then I just prayed that he would give me the right artist for the book. So I woke up the next morning, went downstairs, got myself a cup of tea, opened my computer, and without a word of a lie, the very first portfolio I looked at belonged to Colin. And I was like, this can't be real. Sometimes when a miracle happens, and I do think that's what that is, it's sometimes hard to believe. And I immediately ran up and I woke Dave up. I normally let him sleep in, but no, not that day. And I was like, you've got to see this and tell me if this is as good as I think it is. And he was like, he's perfect. You don't need to look any farther. So I immediately reached out to Colin. And he was available, and he had done a little bit of comic work before. I'm not sure if it's been published or not yet, but mostly what he has done, he's a graduate of SCAD, mm-hmm. And Tom Lyle actually is the one who told him about our Facebook post, and I hope he's doing better. But Colin has done work for the Ark, the Noah's Ark. That's, you know, the big one, I think, that you can go either that or the Bible. I can't remember. There's like two things. But he's done artwork, biblical artwork before. And Colin, I apologize that it's maybe I haven't had enough tea this week. But you can find out on the Kickstarter page.
We'll definitely be sharing that in the show notes along. I also looked up his portfolio online and added that to the notes so people can see of the other commission work he does, because his cross section of stuff is pretty broad is an understatement. Yeah. But No, he kind of does have that lean towards hyper-realistic, which I agree is going to be a really neat look for this. I'm looking at some of his Captain America stuff he did that were commissions or something that I was like, I want that now.
I think the nice thing about what Colin does too is he's still a traditional artist. So he works on pencil and paper, and there is a feel from traditional art that a grittiness to it, because he's done all the colors for the book too, because we're doing the book in grayscale, and he uses a combination of airbrush and ink wash, and the feel that you get, the grittiness, it's so perfect for this story and the setting. And I love the fact that you know, we have this tangible thing that you can hold in your hands in terms of the artwork as well. It makes me sad that people don't work traditionally more. But there's a page I just have to say that you can see in the previews. I think it's page 4 and 5, where there's like a double page spread of locusts, a swarm of locusts. And he drew every single one of those by hand. So something to be said.
Oh, wow.
There's no copy happening there. There is that's a lot of hard work and commitment.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just staring at it right now as you say that. And I'm contemplating the realities of what you just said. And it's why Hector and I talk about this from time to time on the show, of some people, like you said, you kind of had that stereotypical response to David being in comics of, oh, you're in your mom's basement and those are for kids and stuff. But the more and more time I've spent as a collector and as a fan and meeting artists and seeing their core work, you go, no, I'm not. I can't even count the number of locusts on this page, but that artists are so dedicated to this craft because it's something that they find such enjoyment out of. It's the ability to purely create from ex nihilo, from nothing, that is so amazing that it's hard not to appreciate. And as a splash page, that's really neat. But sometimes artists will dump that much effort into a single panel that somebody's eyes might float over in a read through and never go back to. And it's why I find myself personally reading a comic sometimes 3 or 4 times. Like, the first time is going to nail the story, and the second time and third time is usually, okay, what did I actually miss?
Yeah.
Because artists attack the page with purpose, just as a writer attacks a script. And
that sounds a really good freestyle hip hop line.
Like, right.
Artists attack the page with purpose. Like, I need a beat and like a little scratching in the background. That would be fantastic. Go on.
Wow. I didn't think I had that in me, but not. Wow. I
have to put that in my notes. Hold on.
Yep. Yeah. Calling it a day because I'm not going to top that. But yeah, it's why we love comics so much and why we chose to focus that part of our fandom for this show, and why we love having folks like you on to talk about the passion in their projects. And that sounds really, that's a really neat story that you kind of, that Colin was at the top of your pile. And also, you know, since we've been doing like random shout outs for this, the more SCAD graduates I run into, the more I'm impressed with the quality of student that they have produced. And that's across like the last 2 decades that I feel like I hear their name brought up more than almost anywhere else right now. So for those of you that are still trying to figure out, you know, where am I going to go to art school or things, SCAD is definitely worth your time and a look, because there's so many people from, I mean, all the way down just the design. I'm actually in the process of starting a church, planning a church. So I had to go through that process of finding a logo artist, which I was like, wow, I know all these really cool comic artists, but they probably don't want to do corporate design. And someone recommended a corporate designer from SCAD for me, and I'm really happy with what I got. So
yeah, I agree. I think the quality of student they're turning out is hard to beat right now.
Now, I've done a couple shows in that region recently, and like, so, or a couple cons, and like, honestly, until like because, you know, I don't pay attention to everything. I had missed that that existed until like March. And, you know, I was down there and actually talking to some of the artists and the students there, like they were more serious about their craft than I've seen a lot of people doing. And so it's really neat to be involved in that region.
No, it's interesting where comics has kind of started popping up across the United States and Canada in terms of these little pockets of creators and schools and all that. So, you know, I keep telling people, I feel like this is one of the best times to be in comics, that I feel like the industry keeps trying to sing doom and gloom, but you walk directly into a local comic shop right now, even down to, I have a small local shop, but it's still the epitome of a local comic shop and stuff on the walls and people talking inside, that I feel like some people worry that digital media is like getting in our way, but I'm sorry, you just showed us there's still artists that are still doing pencil and paper, doing their own inks. And I still see people picking up comics because it still means something to them. And in fact, it's an entirely new generation that was introduced because of movies or other things that they've seen that are now wandering into the shop to be told a story, and to be told a story by talented creators. That with so much content being thrown at us, it's endless, the possibilities of telling stories. So I think something that we definitely need to hear from you and hear for our listeners and everything is, you told us a bit about why Ruth, so, and why the time period you put it in and the type of artists that you've selected, but what's the piece of this story that just energized you the most, that really set you ablaze for, this is the thing that I've been called to do right now, and this is the part that I was the most excited about?
I think looking back on all the stories that I've told, starting with Wonder Woman, there is this theme of love being explored on some level. So I would say that goes through Wonder Woman, through Rose. Rose specifically is a very selfless, sacrificial kind of love, through the Light Princess. And then I think when you read the story of Ruth, that's what certainly for me really stands out. That kind of unconditional love by Ruth, that Ruth has for Naomi, for that family, for her God, and how that love that she carries within her gives her the strength to do difficult, what would be seemingly incredibly difficult things. So, for example, supporting the two of them by going out and working the fields. When I look at it, if she had done that 2,000 years ago, or if she'd done that 100 years ago, at either of those times, she would have been putting herself into such an incredibly dangerous situation, being a beautiful young woman on her own out with a bunch of men laboring in a field. But she was willing to do that because she just had such a love for her family and for Naomi, but also a faith that God would take care of them. And those two things within that story, and how her faith, her dependence on God, is rewarded to the point where she ultimately she's part of David's line, and as a result, part of the messianic line. It's such a tremendous story, and it just moves me every time I think about it. And it's something that I think that as a mother, I try to aspire to, but like Hector, you know, I don't always have that. I don't think that my love for my family is always reflected in such a positive way, but, or even that my faith is as unconditional as hers is at times. So I feel like that story is such an aspirational one for anybody who wants to explore their faith or to look at their own faith.
No, I mean, personally, Ruth, the Book of Ruth has a meaning for my wife and I that inside both of our wedding bands, we actually have Ruth 1:16 engraved, which is, "But Ruth replied, 'Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God.'"
Yeah.
And we acknowledge that that's slightly out of context, but the meaning and the saying, yeah, Hector, yeah. You see, the joy of two pastors talking about things and talking about things mean that we think all the rabbit trails and overthink a lot, which yeah. is why we love comics, because yeah. details and everything. But the message is still true between the two of us and to this day that no matter what, going to be there, I'm staying, and God is going to be the center of our lives.
Yeah.
So that imagery being told out, and like you said, against that backdrop of the Great Depression, something that folks in America, you know, we personally didn't experience it, but we certainly learned about it in school, and multitudes of movies and books have been written and stories have been told, that it's a more visceral experience for us, for it's something that we know happened. And for those that don't quite know where they're at in their faith journey or whatnot, I think that's a really neat way to tell, like you said, you could tell a 2,000-year-old story and it'd still be relevant. But this helps folks in a cultural context understand really what Ruth's actions were. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was drawn to the project when I initially saw it, because I was like, oh, that's, well, A, there's a comic book creator that's doing Bible work. Hector and I know tons of folks that have done visual Bibles and retellings of sections, some directly in context, others as retellings. And one thing that we wanted to be able to celebrate is folks that have been in the comics industry and done a cross-section of work that are celebrating their faith by just straight up telling a story. And we know that you've partnered with some other folks that we know have some of that backing, that knowing that Lee Weeks is going to do one of your variant covers, that's super exciting to Hector. And I know Hector has run into Lee on the convention trail multiple times. And it's just neat to be able to see in a culture, especially today, that tends to not necessarily welcome the Christian story in the grander narrative of culture, being brave to be able to produce stuff and allow it to speak for itself. Because, yeah, it's just one of those things that culture is interesting right now.
It's hard, but it's funny when you say that, because I've had a couple moments as I've been promoting this where I've even found myself almost apologizing as I'm trying to sell this book to a broader public, almost apologizing for the fact that, yes, this is a Bible story, but there's more to it than that. And
right.
I caught myself the other day and I sort of had to stop and take a minute and say, you know what, Lord, okay, this, like, I'm going about this the wrong way. Like, I need to really celebrate, but it's so easy, especially working in this industry, to find yourself catering maybe to the wrong thing right now. Like, I don't want people to buy it because it's not a Bible story. Do you know what I mean? Like, the basis of what this is it is a Bible story, and I'm grateful that God is so patient with me, and he'll use me in spite of my imperfections and my flaws. But something I wanted to go back to with Lee Weeks is that every variant artist on the book is an artist who has a strong faith. So it's not just Lee. Like, I was very specific when I picked the variant artists. I didn't want somebody who didn't believe in God and what the story is. So Jason, Lee, Billy, David, everybody who's had their hand and touched this book has been somebody, right down to the letter, has been a person of faith. And I feel like that is incredibly important and was for me in this book, and very special.
Oh, that's great. Really appreciate hearing that and knowing that and allowing our audience to understand that, because for a lot of some folks, we don't always, you know, some folks wear their faith on their sleeve, and some of us, I mean, like we've said, the comic industry can be a difficult environment.
Well, it's like,
it's a great environment, but it's difficult for faith. Yeah. Go ahead, Hector.
Well, you know, one of the things I do, Meredith, is I write a book series called Faith and Fandom, and it's like devotionals of like encouraging essays on comic books, superhero stuff like that. And I spend almost every other weekend at a Comic-Con, and you know, it's like being in that culture of being like publicly representing faith. Like it's like almost every other person that walk by is usually that, not necessarily a sneer, but like you can watch people's facial expressions of like, ooh, why is this here? And it's a hard thing to publicly put yourself out in that setting, with, you know, that, with that, with, even if you're just trying to put your art out there, if it has a biblical basis, it can put you in a position of like just disrespect, I guess, or discouragement. But like, and that's why I think, you know, we have friends that do biblical comics on a regular basis, but honestly, you doing something like this adds a level of clout or a level of perfection, not perfection, but professionalism to it, that you doing that actually just brings a little more focus to it. And so I appreciate that, because I know that, you know, you can have that moment where you feel apologetic because you feel like you're could be pushing something on someone, or, you know, the public perception. But, you know, I appreciate what you're doing with that.
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, I would say I've been, again, I keep saying blessed that, you know, I'm fairly open about my faith. You know, I've got the blog that I write about. So most people who come up to me at a convention already know that I have a strong faith. And a lot of creators will even, peers within the industry will talk to me about it, even if they don't believe, because I think there's people want to be convinced. On some level, the people who want to be convinced will find you and they'll seek you out. And so I try not to, this is the first situation where I would say I've maybe put something out there that's faith-based, that's so obviously faith-based. Right. And that's where I've found myself, as I'm asking people to invest in it, I found myself apologizing for that. And I'm glad that I came to an awareness of it earlier on. But still, it's easy to do. And because we all want to be able to be successful. And it's kind of, I think it, on some level, there's always that temptation to trade success for something else. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
no, absolutely.
It's constantly, especially I find for myself a resetting of what am I looking to get out of my life? Like I always just keep coming back to the fact that there is nothing that brings me more joy, more overwhelming joy than the relationship that I have with God. So, you know, it's always a reset, but I'm glad that there's always the opportunity to reset.
So I have two quick questions for you, because I know our time is running short. Question one, do you have any vision or desire to see this option for any other media?
From the moment I started writing it, both Dave and I felt like it would make an incredible movie, and it wouldn't be an expensive movie to make, because it's, you know, set in the plains. It's kind of the kind of movie we could make in Essex County, even with the filmmakers that are around here. So yeah, I do see it.
My first thought as well. Yeah. When I was looking through your initial art and the pitch of it and everything, I was like, this could easily be a great movie or a Netflix series, something to that effect.
Yeah.
Then it just, to me, that seems really organic. And I was just wondering if that was intentional or on your radar for that, because I'd watch that.
It wasn't intentional. I don't ever want to write a project specifically with the idea that it's going to be made into a movie, because I think you undermine your own creativity. If you're going to write a movie, write a movie. Mm. So, but that doesn't mean that I don't think it would make a beautiful movie. At the same point, I don't know anybody in the movie industry, so I kind of leave that one up to God. If somebody's going to find it and it's intended to be a movie, then I can do my best to put it out there. And it's been uncomfortable sometimes pushing the Kickstarter because it's not my nature, especially as a Canadian, to put myself forward. But
you've been doing a great job. Well, thank you.
I'm like, people are sick of me by now.
That's called doing Kickstarter. So you're doing it right.
Okay.
And my other question is, at the end of the day, let's say your journey's done writing comics. What's the one work that you want people to know you for, or that you're most proud of?
If I never wrote another comic again.
Yeah. Or
let's say that today was the end of my comic book career and I never write something else again. I think it would be this one, truthfully. I there's a lot of prayer and emotional and spiritual growth that went into this book, and everything I do, I hope I continue to grow and get better as a writer and a storyteller. And I would not leave comics if I had to leave today disappointed in what I've accomplished. And I would be very proud if this was the book that people held up. I know everybody holds up Wonder Woman because she's a recognizable character, but
right.
I feel like this is the strongest story and the work maybe that I'm most proud of at this point.
So Meredith, as we kind of come to a close, can you tell us kind of what you're hoping folks to have heard today, what you hope folks will see in your Kickstarter? And we will supply the Kickstarter link in the show notes, and you can also find it as The Book of Ruth on Kickstarter. But tell us kind of where the campaign is today, and some of, you know, this is your elevator pitch, your final pitch to our audience for why The Book of Ruth and what the Kickstarter is ultimately all about.
Chris and I are both backing it, by the way, just for the record.
Thank you both.
Yeah, we said that at the top, but we'll repeat it now.
And during our conversation, I also went back and bought all of Rose because.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you.
Yeah, if we don't say it again, Rose, actually, I was working and managing a comic shop at the time Rose was on the shelf, and we got that into the hands of a multitude of people, and you definitely had a following across faith and across just comics in general, that was a breath of fresh air to a lot of folks. And I definitely needed to get that in there, that Rose is a great piece of work. You can see that link in the show notes as well. If you haven't read it, it's worth a visit. It's a great fantasy piece. And Meredith, you really nailed it there. And just wanted to share that with you from kind of my background, is haven't always been in ministry, but actually stood at the front line of a comic shop and did FOC like all the other folks out there. So, but yeah, as we wrap up, give us the final pitch on The Book of Ruth, the Kickstarter.
All right. Well, right now I believe we're 43 or 44% funded. So we're doing really well, but we need that funding has come with, you know, about 120 backers. There's still a lot of people who are following it. Hopefully they're going to back it. But the fact of the matter is that this is a gorgeously illustrated story. And I think it's such a heartfelt story that you really need to pick it up. It's one of those, you can take it to your Sunday school class and I think you can share it with them, but I think you could give it to your best friend. And the great thing about it being a graphic novel is that it reads like a book. It's like a beautiful picture book or coffee table book that, you know, you can look through and really enjoy. And I just feel, you know, at the end of the day, this book has been such a blessing to me. I just hope that it, and I know it's been a huge blessing for Colin as well. And I feel like it really has the potential to be a blessing for, and I certainly hope and pray that it is the blessing for the people who read it and pick it up, that it's been for the two of us. I'm terrible.
It's okay.
I'm the worst at elevator pitches. But I had to do it it was awful too. I'm like, I don't know. I had.
It's great. You should read it.
That one.
Well, I think folks will probably be able to tell from the hour we've spent the dedication you have to this particular topic and to the work here. And for folks, you can literally get in to get a digital copy of Ruth for as low as $15. There are multiple tiers with all kinds of wonderful options in there. I mean, there's even an option for a dinner date with you and David, which I think is amazing, but I'm not going to find myself at San Diego, unfortunately. But if anyone's going to MegaCon or San Diego and you've got some money burning a hole in your pocket and you want to support an amazing Kickstarter and also get dinner with Meredith and David, well, your option is available. Actually, you have three people that have already backed that. So you're not going to be alone at dinner. So that's great. I thought that was a pretty unique, tier, and that's like the awesome part about Kickstarter is those random tiers and everything that you can throw at it. And that's a neat one.
I totally give the credit for that tier to our agent Doug Peters. He's like, yeah, why don't you just offer dinner to somebody? I guess they do it with, like, Scott Snyder's done it, and he's like, people totally want to have dinner with the two of you. So
yes,
thank you, Doug, for the suggestion, and thank you to the three people who want to have dinner with us. You're not making us eat alone.
It's like, I can't even get my friends to have dinner with me, let alone the people who read my books.
I'm not cooking, so it's going to be good.
Oh, well, see? And the more you know. And it's been such a wonderful experience getting to talk to you, Meredith. So thank you. It's been a pleasure having you just hang out and chat with us today. Don't forget, everyone, you can check out her Kickstarter for the Book of Ruth. It's going on right now. I think when this episode gets published, which will be very soon, there should be about 14 days left or so. So little past the halfway mark in money and in time left. So if you're interested, definitely make sure you check out the link in the show notes and go and support that if that's something that you're interested in. So, Hector, Meredith, that's it for us here at the Pull List Podcast. Episode 27 is now in the books and is now also in your ears. But we couldn't possibly do this alone. As many as you know, we take this epic journey of podcasts and fandom with two other amazing podcasts that are part of the Love Thy Nerd Podcast Network. First, we have Humans of Gaming with Drew and Chris. They do interviews, very similar to like we did today, with game designers, producers, and other creators, and really gets to the heart of why they do what they do. And next, we have Bubba, Matt, and Kate. They bring us the Free Play Podcast that covers just about everything else, commonly nerdy, uncommonly nerdy. It's super fun. It's a weekly hit of what's going on in the nerd sphere, and it's just a lot of fun. If you like a good humored, but also kind of what's going on, you can hit the Free Play Podcast. Hector, Meredith, thanks for joining us today and having this awesome conversation.
Thank you.
And yeah, absolutely. And all of our listeners, thank you for making Hector and I your primary source of all things comic booky and generally nerdy on a, well, near weekly basis. So don't leave us hanging. Rate and review the show on your podcasting app of choice. We're on the iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and so many more. Can't find us? Let us know. Write us at thepulllistpodcast@lovethynerd.com or look for us at thepulllistpodcast.com. We love being able to bring creators to you. We hope to do it so much more. Welcome to the start of year two of the Pull List Podcast, everybody. So thanks for listening, and remember, kids, read more comics. I'm gonna take all seven continents in the game of Risk. I'm the master of epic duels.